and we are here today to talk about the victories and travails of being an RPG artist. And with me today are two guys very deep on that particular subject, Mr. Jacob Blackman. How you doing, Jacob?
Hello, glad to be here.
And Walter Billiard, frequent co-host, artist, and head of a publishing studio in his own right. How you doing, Walt?
I admit to nothing.
Walt just woke up, folks, so give him some time.
Yes, because, you know, 4 hours of sleep in 3 days is not something I recommend.
That's crazy, Walt.
Mm-hmm. Yep, the human heart can only stand so much, so let's get this gaming thing on before mine explodes.
So Walt is basically role-playing Batman using the method acting.
Yes, and I have all the injuries to go with it. Speaking of which, did you guys see that article from a few years ago from the New England Journal of Medicine where they detail many of Batman's most famous injuries and what he would look like 10 years into his career?
Yeah, he'd just be this scarred, lumpy mess of a man. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that after the broken spine and severed spinal column, that spinal cord, rather, I mean, magic ropes don't exist in real life, so you can't just bounce back from that. So.
Yes. And did you see that Aid is in the chat?
He needs adding. Sorry, Aid. I missed you completely there, buddy. Aid Smith, how you doing?
Hello. Okay, thank you very much.
Harvey, I've been waiting for too long.
About a week and a half. It's terrible.
Aid, yes!
Aid is the head of Mesozoic Press and an RPG artist, freelancer, also writer in his own right. And we're talking about life as an RPG artist today. And I'm going to go around, starting with Jacob, just having you guys do a quick summary of your experience in that world. So, Jacob, go.
Well, if you want a quick summary, that's not really not going to happen. I've been doing...
I've been a quickie, always a longie.
Yes. Well, let's see. I've been doing art for the industry since I was in high school. I started at my local shop. They had a local magazine for gaming there. I forget the name of the magazine. It's been so long. It was something like Collectible Quarterly something, where the card games were really big at the time, and that it was Magic and the Vampire card game, and all those were just starting to come out. And so I did a couple of pieces for each of those issues that came out, and that's really where I got my start in the gaming industry. Much later, you know, I would do freelance work here and there for individuals. I did some work on a web comic, but then I really started getting in on the tabletop industry when I met Mike Lafferty. He contacted me in 2007 to do some of the first game product art that I ever did. That was back when he was working with Vigilant Studios, I believe it was called.
Vigilant Press,
yeah.
Mike is muted.
And
he's like...
I was just making bad jokes. It's okay.
That's fine. But yeah, I did some work for some adventures that he was writing. And shortly after that, he started Fainting Goat Games, and I continued to do some work for him. Then I started working with Owen Stevens of Super Genius Games at the time. That was in 2011. And I did several monster books and PDFs for them. In 2012, my career exploded. They did a podcast. Owen Stevens and Steve Russell of Wright Publishing did a podcast about the gaming industry. And one episode they talked about freelance artists who they enjoyed working with. And my name came up, and suddenly I was being contacted by everyone. All of a sudden, I went from working for two or three companies to working for dozens of companies. My name was out there in the third party, and I was working.
I'll have to punch Owen if I ever meet him for that. He's become much more difficult to get a hold of since then.
My schedule is pretty tight at times, and much like being a freelance illustrator, there's all that feast and famine. It's a whole lot of work at once, and sometimes there's months of nothing. You just have, but I'll talk about that on a later date. And that's pretty much where I am now.
So with the feast and famine in those periods of drought, is that when you engage with all of the groupies? Screaming fans knocking down your door.
I'm supposed to have groupies. Where are my groupies? I want groupies. I would love to have groupies. If I have groupies, please contact me, commissionprodigyduck@gmail.com, and I will gladly accept your groupiness.
I am skeptical of the existence of groupies in the RPG scene. I did have one publisher tell me he once got laid at a convention in Louisiana where he was a featured speaker on one panel by a woman who was very impressed with what he had to say. I will stipulate that story is not impossible, but I am skeptical.
So. Now, that was the hip replacement convention that they had out there, right? Everybody's over like 70.
I suspect Walt is even more skeptical of that story than I am, but that's okay. Moving right along. Aid, talk about your credentials in the RPG artist world.
It's fun enough. It's very similar to Jacob's. About 20 years ago, I did some stuff with a company in the UK, which was Sweatdrop Comics. We did some manga-style products. I worked with them for a couple of years, probably about 3 or 4 years. We were just basically putting some stuff out. But the bane of my existence is I'm incredibly slow at drawing. So while they were knocking comics out by the dozen, I was like, I'll get there eventually. And so the only thing I actually got published through them was 2 short stories, I believe, at some point. And then pretty much just decided to do some stuff on my own. Released some PDFs with some hero art in it. And again, once again, contacted Mike at some point to do some stuff on Vigilance Press, and that kind of grew into stuff for Faint and Goat. And so at the moment, though, I have the opposite problem to Jacob. I have very little work coming for the artwork as it stands at the moment, because most of my time seems to be taken up with either writing or doing layout work. So or drawing maps. That's something I've been doing recently. I've been a fair cartographer for some projects in the last couple of months. So I always feel that I'm letting my drawing skills slack slightly when I end up spending months and months and months on time doing other things. But so I've kind of branched out from where I was originally. So originally it was like a couple of pieces here and there doing superhero stuff and sci-fi stuff, and now it's kind of like a little bit of writing, little bit of artwork, little bit of cartography, all this kind of stuff as well. But most of the stuff I illustrate nowadays is my own products, basically just so, because I'm too cheap to pay anybody else to do it. So that's the way it goes.
Yeah, but at least you can count on yourself to get the project to look like how you want.
Well, yeah, you'd hope so. Yeah, unfortunately, I also suffer probably something very similar, maybe Jacob suffers from as well, is every time I do a bit of artwork, I absolutely despise it. Especially, I get to a pencil stage and I don't like it. Get to an ink stage, it's not great. Get to a finish stage, that'll do. And that's it. So yeah, everything I do is never, let's say, my general rule is I'm about 80% happy with everything I do. So that seems to be the way it goes.
And Mike is
muted. And I'm off mute. Now you wear a lot of hats, but in terms of your artist career, can you tell us a little about that?
I started drawing as a way to pass the time on deployment, because you see in the military movies, like, guys are in the chow line and it's suddenly a mortar goes off and everybody's like, to the weapons. And then they're like, to the wall. And it doesn't really happen like that. I mean, there are times where that could happen, but I mean, it's most of the time it's long, boring stretches of nothing, bracketed by intense periods of action. And so for those long periods of nothing, before video games were a thing and handheld video games, I mean, when my first deployments, the only thing that was really out there was like the original Game Boy. I mean, so.
How old are you exactly?
I'm sorry?
Just kidding. I said, how old are you exactly?
You know, we had, I mean, look, I never judged Paul Revere by his fashion choices. So, I mean, you know, we just had to fight side by side. But I got out of the military in my mid-20s before I went back in. And then I started doing thumbnail work, of all things. Comic artist friend of mine was like, look, I have this guy I'm working with that cannot give me a coherent script. He's a brilliant writer, and in fact, he still works in comics today, but he cannot give me a coherent script. I will pay you to do thumbnails, read the script, try and decipher what the hell this idiot is talking about, and then create a storyboard for me so I can actually do the panels. Because he was super busy at the time. So I said, whatever. And this is back right before the comics collapsed in the mid-90s. So, like, you know, there were people who, you see those, like, what is it, Empire Records, where the TV show where they're just, like, kicking money off their hand and shit like that. I mean, that's what the comic industry was like before the collapse. Everybody was throwing money at everybody. So I did that for a while, and then I left on several deployments again, and then I came back, and I was trying to get into RPG art, and there was just no easy way to do it at the time. I mean, you had to know somebody who knew somebody, and there were bribery. You had to rub somebody in some place you didn't want to touch. I mean, it was pretty creepy. So I said, you know something? This is stupid. There's got to be a better way to do this. So I started Hazard Studio, and as a way for artists to kind of get together and go through the resources so that we didn't have to sit there and be like, hello. I just have a – sorry, dog is saying hello as well. He's like – So, you know, we said we put Hazard Studio together, and a bunch of artists came in with me, and we just kind of learned the process. And I started working for Steam Power Publishing, that person went on later. I don't know if I should – Andrew – oh crap, I just mentioned his name. I don't know if
is
I can
that, is that Andrew Garfield of Spider-Man fame?
Yes. he actually went on to work for Games Workshop, and has had a very successful career. I started working for a bunch of people all throughout the and much like Jacob's experience, it really wasn't my stuff really didn't explode until I met Chuck Rice. And he started commissioning stuff from me, including stuff while I was on deployment. He's like, you know, and he said, you know, do you have any access to where you could get me files? I'm like, yeah. I said, I could probably push something through my 96 baud modem that I have out here. I mean, hold on, meaning, you know, and then all of a sudden now we have an internet connection. So yeah, it was pretty interesting to get my stuff out there. But a lot like Aid, my drawing time right now is limited. First of all, I always have something crawling over me. He looks a lot cuter than he is, folks. Just writing, layout, editing. It's crazy.
Well, because you're not just an artist. You're also a writer. You have this podcast, and you're doing another podcast professionally. And you just got signed to a novel series through any publisher, right?
Yep. Just signed a 3-book deal with a publisher. I'm doing audio narration. You know, the long and short of it is I just don't sleep. I need something to fill the time.
Occasionally you have to fight off rival ninja clans and waves of Rhode Island. I mean, there's a lot going on for Walt.
There's a lot of ninjas in Rhode Island. You'd be surprised. I mean, granted, most of them are like 2 feet tall, and you know, they're parents sit on the sidelines going, oh, he's so cute. And, you know, you're just like, oh, screw my life.
Oh, that's you're a teacher at a martial arts studio, right?
Yep.
Talking to my kids teacher the other day about that situation. He was like bemoaning the fact that lots of parents will want to pressure him into giving a belt test before he's ready to give a belt test.
Oh, I'm very open and honest with our parents, because the school I train in believes that martial art is fine, but it does nothing to help you if you get your ass handed to you. So if a parent says, you know, he's been working really hard, when I walk over to the kid and say, defend yourself, and without warning, take his feet out from under him and then step on his belly like, you know, I just shot a buck out in the woods. I'm like, no, he's not ready. If he can't stop me from tripping him, hell no. So, but it's
In short, if you ever want to feel inadequate about yourself on many levels, talk to Weld, because he's got more going on than just about anybody else.
This is why I haven't taken martial arts classes. I'm sticking with what I'm good at.
Oh no, come down, Jacob. Come down. We'll get you on the mat. The Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is amazing. It's so much fun.
Oh, it looks great. I love it. It's just I am round, and that is my shape.
No, it's totally cool. I mean, one of my instructors is missing most of his right hand. Mm. So anybody can do it. And the fun part about it is, you know, I've had a couple of instructors who said, you know, jiu-jitsu is just really angry hugging. I was like, okay. So, yeah, it's fun.
So, getting back on task.
Art. Task. Art. So, I thought you were going somewhere with that, man. I'm sorry.
No, I'm right. You're the host.
I am the host. Yeah, so... You know, there's breaking into the industry, which is kind of like what Jacob has done through his exposure. And I apologize that my podcast here doesn't have quite the reach of an Owen Stevens podcast, but when I do have one on, I have a much bigger reach. But
you email all the hosts whiskey. It's fine.
It's hard to get that overseas, but one day you're going to get a whole barrel, Aid. So be ready for that day.
I'll be fine with Fanny Goat snack cakes.
Yes,
got to get those actually made someday.
Banana is my favorite. Artificial banana flavor is just the best.
It is a very good thing indeed. So I mean, it's kind of like, seems like we got two paths here. I mean, there's breaking in like Jacob has done, where you're getting a lot of work, and then there's creating your own work, which is, I mean, it's kind of what I did as a writer, because I guess I can write it for other people, because there's a lot of assholes in the RPG business. I'm sorry. And, you know, at least if you're working for yourself, you can control your promotion, control the quality.
Control the asshole.
Yeah, you can control the asshole, and you can get paid. Whereas if you're working for someone else, you have to, you know, trust that they're going to do the right thing, you know. I don't want to name any names, Adam Entertainment, but, you know, I had a publisher, first guy I ever wrote for, made a big deal about being a pro, and I've got a contract, and you're going to get paid. And he broke it within, like, 2 months. And, you know, I still haven't gotten fully paid for stuff I wrote for him that he's still selling and I'm supposed to be getting a commission on. So kind of sour to me. And that's why I do stuff on my own, and I've been fairly successful at it. But, you know, focusing on art.
So you're talking about that as well, but doing your own thing. I self-published a 2-issue comic book series about 20 years ago. Now, so this is, now we're talking pre-Kickstarter, all that stuff. So I still have lots of those issues live around, because literally the only way I could sell those issues would be either contacting comic shops locally or literally taking it to the comic shop and saying, sell my book. That was it. So, and obviously my reach is fairly limited, and I, you know, took a couple of London. I did have some in Forbidden Planet in London, which is the biggest comic shop pretty much in the country. There was some sitting on there for shelves a few times. But I literally sank, I don't know if it was £1,000 or £1,500 into it, and made virtually nothing back on it. So it's like, yeah. So obviously nowadays that would be a Kickstarter product, and you'd know, okay, I've got distribution. You've got digital distribution. You've got obviously mail distribution, but you'd also guarantee if you've got the money coming from Kickstarter, you're going to get paid that money through Kickstarter. At least they've got that as well. So that's probably one of the biggest setbacks I had trying to kind of self-publish myself in that respect. and obviously then go to the RPG stuff. And with that was, because it's all digital and PDFs, I actually knew that I had at least a selling point to sell my stuff from day one, rather than having to go out there and talking to all these different stores and stuff. Because if Drive for RPG existed, I could there go, right, okay, if I write something and put it on there, maybe I'll sell it for you. At least there's that. So that's definitely what's changed in the last couple of years, for sure.
Yeah, DriveThruRPG has just been a boon for self-publishers. It's been wonderful, I've noticed. It's helped everyone out. Because I've got a lot of personal projects. Unfortunately, I don't know how to self-publish. Luckily, I have many friends who have individual self-publishing companies, so I am able to rely on them, and we are on good enough relation that I know they will not screw me by not giving me my proper cut.
Well, there, I mean, that's part of the scene, is you can get to know people and you decide who you can trust and who you can't. You know, I still do occasional freelancing, but I do it for companies who, you know, will actually pay me eventually.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes it takes a while. I had a high profile project I worked on a few years ago, and it took me 18 months to get a check.
Hmm.
Which is strangely common, even with like top tier publishers in the RPG work.
Some people say treat it as a lottery. Just pretend it's a lottery win. It's like, oh my god, okay, that's great, I got paid. Just pretend it's a lottery ticket. That's all you got to worry about. Don't rely on it to pay your bills. Just think of it as a little special boost.
So I don't want to step off the subject of RPG art, because that's kind of our focus. But it occurs to me, all three of you guys are into superheroes. All three of you guys are artists. Why haven't you guys done comic books? I mean, self-published comic books.
I don't have story ideas. I have character ideas, and I have world ideas. Obviously, you've seen my superpowered legends, and even though they're homage characters, there's a lot of original work that goes into those as well, because I have to figure out how they work in the world, how they interact with different characters, all of that, and. But I just don't have stories, so that's my issue.
Aid.
Well, say the two issues I put out were manga style, and because I was a massive anime manga fan back then, so did that. And it was called Mesozoic, and that's where Mesozoic Press came from. It was about a humanoid dinosaur from another dimension. So that was kind of cool. But
can these issues somehow be picked up by anybody?
Well, there's somewhere there are like two big boxes full of issues that have not been sold, and the original artwork. I did consider rescanning all the original artwork and releasing them as PDFs. And that may be a thing I may do, even if they go out for literally nothing, because they just bought the hell of it.
I say that's not hard to do. You can take it to a copy shop.
Yeah. So I think that's a possibility. But yeah, and then like I said before, I'm so slow. That's the main drawback. I started a Bandura comic, and I got six or seven pages into it, and then was questioning exactly where the story was going, and realized I had to redraw stuff from page one because I hadn't scripted the stuff, because I'm terrible for doing that.
For our listeners who don't know, could you, because I think the three of us know, but could you
Bandura was one of my characters I used in an Icons game, which is effectively a psychic koala bear. So yeah, so that was
sort of a Rockford Files style detective.
Yeah, it was effectively a detective show kind of thing, but it was just happened to be that the koala bear was the star. Yeah, but the great thing about that was it was doing the research. I mean, again, Google Maps, I could literally zoom into to places in Sydney, Australia, and draw them from the pictures. It was fantastic. It was so good. And I could now say, like, I've got scenes on like the seafront overlook Sydney Opera House, and I can tell exactly where those are. These people were standing in that location because they can see the Sydney Opera House. That's just so absolutely fantastic nowadays. And then I started something a couple of months ago, again, manga style, which is like a fantasy kind of thing, which was possibly going to tie into some kind of RPG stat block thing at some point as well. And that one, though, I actually scripted all 24 pages. So I got the entire thing going, which is fantastic. I'm three or four pages into that. And again, because I'm not happy with it, 80 pages into it, 80% happy with everything, it's like, yeah, do I like it or not? And then I go and question the first three pages, so I never get to page four. That's my biggest downfall. I'm always never happy. So Some people say, yeah, I know, I can't remember, there was another artist that basically said, yeah, just move on, forget about it, don't keep redrawing the hand, or don't keep redrawing whatever, just move on to the next one. Next time you draw a hand, you'll be better at it. Don't keep redrawing the one you're not happy with. But I haven't quite learned that lesson yet.
Fair enough. Well, let me ask you guys, I mean, as far as making a living, I mean, Jacob, this is your primary income, right?
Yes, I am a full-time freelancer.
Okay, cool. And Aid, what about you?
Yeah, this is all my, it's all I do. But okay. That's why I'm spread so thin over many, many different types of gear income, because it's safe. Sometimes there's a lot of artwork going, sometimes I need to do some writing, sometimes I need to do some cartography. It's because I can't rely on one thing, one piece, one, just doing artwork for people is either it's not good enough to actually kind of the, you know, keep getting the actual commissions in to keep it going, and I have to do either my own thing or do something with somebody else. But yeah, that's so it's a smorgasbord of stuff, but it's great because it means, let's say now I know how to make PDFs myself, I know how to write things, I know how to draw things, I can literally do stuff myself now. It's really good. So
okay, well, let me ask you, I mean, kind of like Walt and Jacob, you write as well as do other stuff. What do you prefer, doing the art stuff, doing the writing, which is more gratifying for you?
I'm probably more I think everything I've written for people, I'm largely happier with the end result more than anything I do artwork wise, because I see stuff that Jacob puts out, I see stuff that other people put out. If I even compare myself to like a Marvel or DC artist, then I was like, oh well, yeah, I'm just fucking terrible, so why bother? So I'm never happy with whatever I do, but you know, artwork, writing is kind of like, generally speaking, I'm happy with that, although I have just literally spent the last 2 days staring at a blank page and managed to get like 3 paragraphs off it, so it's like it's like, okay, I'm just gonna rewrite this character's background because the other one was terrible, and I just like sit there thinking, yep, cannot think of a damn thing. So yeah, I and the best thing I'd say, I've done stuff for the Star Trek role playing game, I've done stuff for Mutants Masterminds, and I love that stuff because I get to kind of like do something within those worlds, environments that are kind of like, you know, I'm fond of. So the idea I can write like Captain Picard's little autobiography for the stuff, I've just finished off the villains thing for Star Trek, so I got to do Khan, which is absolutely fantastic. So, you know, that's absolutely brilliant. But
did you make the epic roar every time you wrote something?
I can't remember if we actually what one got taken up. I did try and get him to almost like say like, oh, they will scream my name in pain, but I can't remember if that actually got in the final cut or not. But yeah, it was something that got there. But yeah.
Right on. What do you guys, when you guys are talking, you know, putting all these projects out there and chasing projects, what's the hardest part about chasing the art? Like, so that, you know, for Jacob, this is your primary income. I mean, but for Aid and I, we do it supplementary. So how often do you chase a project so that you can start putting stuff on the page?
Oh, wow. When I get, it depends on how inspired I am by the particular project, because there are times where I will get a commission and I'm just thinking, well, it's relatively easy. There's plenty of sample work I can get. You know, if he wants a drawing of a World War II soldier, great. I can look up what a World War II soldier is on any side and find out what their uniforms were and weapons. There's plenty of reference for me to do. You know, it's really easy, and you know, I'll have that done pretty quick. It's when you get into the more fantastical or especially in science fiction, the imaginary side, you really have to think of, how can I bring this person's imagination to life? How much description have they given me on top of that? So they know what they want in compared to what I can give them. And that's often where it might slow me down and in that process, because I really have to think about that and trying to bring something that doesn't exist to life.
I know what, as a publisher, especially small press RPG stuff, I publish all in color, which every day I think maybe I should just go black and white and save money. But I'm a hobbyist publisher. I like the look of full color books. And
color is where it is. It makes everything pop.
It does, but you know, there are some very large publishers doing things in the OSR sphere, or hell, Evil Hat doing Fate, and they're all blue and white, all black and white, and they sell a lot of books. You know, they focus their marketing efforts in other areas. And where I'm going with this is, they used to spend a lot of time, you know, hounding artists. Now we got to change this, we got to change this, got to change that. And there wasn't really a payoff for all that in terms of sales. I'm getting the exact image I had in my mind was sometimes not any more of a, you know, especially for a cover, didn't often translate into, hey, I got 5, 10, 20 more sales. So I decided the only way to do it without making myself and whatever artist I was commissioning crazy was just to give a very brief description, kind of let them go and trust their instincts as an artist. Did that with John Gibbons, who, like you, he's someone I use a lot for Fandango Games. And, you know, he's a great artist, does some really painterly work in digital artwork. But if you give him, you know, too tight of a description, he likes to call it a remit. You know, you just wind up going back and forth in emails for weeks, and it's just aggravation. So I've learned just to kind of scale back as the writer, publisher guy, and just say, here's my vague idea, take it and run. And, you know, just kind of trust that they'll do something with it.
Now, as a publisher, how often do you chase a specific artist? Do you sit there and look at something and be like, yes, I must have this?
It's, I don't at all anymore. Once upon a time I did, but I'm very realistic about my sales numbers. And yeah, there's a long tail in small press RPGs, but if I have to pay over a certain amount for a cover or an interior image, it's just not worth it. You know, eventually I'll make it all back in 5 years. Just, you know,
simply. No, art is expensive. I won't say boo to that.
Yeah. So yeah, I really don't. I mean, I do a lot. I publish a lot of John's stuff, but a lot of John's stuff that I publish is his own ideas. We're doing a setting book right now called The After, and he's been doing his own art for it for God 3 or 4 years before he even started writing. And it's an amazing looking book. The Kickstarter, you know, did really, really well. And a lot of it was because we had that visual element to show people. But if I was commissioning that out of my own pocket, I mean, it would have been like paying for a European vacation. And, you know, you're just doing it all on the hope that there's going to be a market there who's interested when you get done. I worked with a guy who commissioned a 300 page villains book, setting book for Mutants and Masterminds Second Ed, fully illustrated. We were in proofing and layout, and third edition was announced. And all of a sudden, everything that, you know, said Second Ed just wasn't selling anywhere. And so he just, you know, drank himself silly for a night and got out of it and went to become a writer. He does e-novels now, and actually he's making a pretty good sideline. I guess kind of like what Walt is aspiring to do. But I guess where I'm going for with that is, I mean, if you go to a convention and you especially walk down Artist Alley and you look at the commissions, sometimes the rates, you know, especially if you just want to draw someone's fursuit character, is so much higher than what, you know, people are being paid in the RPG business. I always wonder why you guys choose to, you know, focus on gaming, because it's such a niche. There's more money in other segments of the, you know, of the fan world out there.
I've put myself out there in the other industries. I've looked at getting work in like the pony fandom and the furry fandom and other just general fandoms. They don't contact me. I've been up on various websites. I put my rates up there. I put my art up there. You see, and they don't contact me. So the RPG industry is where I'm getting 90% of my work.
Cool. Aid, Walt, you guys have thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, you can make a lot of money going to conventions to do prints. But I mean, there's so much derision on doing that, because I mean, technically, you know, if you draw an original sketch or a sketch cover or whatever, that's a one-off, it's an original work, and that's cool, you know, but even if you do, like, you know, let's take our trademark character from the BAMF podcast, which is Nightcrawler. You know, you do this amazing Nightcrawler sketch, and every, you know, the person who commissions it is like, oh, that's amazing. Somebody's watching you draw it at the convention, and it's like, wow, that's amazing. And you're like, wow, this must be amazing. So with all that amazing going around, you make a print. But technically, should you really do that? Because you don't own the IP for that. You know, so I mean, that can get kind of weird. So at the other side of the coin, you have to look at, you know, can I produce something that I can legally and morally sell that my dog won't have an issue with? That jerk. Damn mailman.
No, I totally get the IP issue. I have a serious problem with that. When I've had artist alley tables at various cons, because I'd be there with my original works because I don't want to be breaking any laws. So I go there with my original works, and I'm not selling anything. I sell a couple of buttons, maybe a few prints of things that are really on the artistic side that I've done that might appeal to a more general audience. But a lot of my original stuff just doesn't move. Meanwhile, I'm looking at the people who are sitting next to me, and they're raking in, you know, $500-$600 selling art of characters they don't own. They are illegally selling, and I'm going like, I hate you. I hate you.
Yeah, because I mean, you can sell. You can sell your original art till you're blue in the face, but if somebody's not as into Kirby the Wonder Squirrel, you know, as they are, say, Wolverine, you know, the guy next to you who's selling those prints, who shouldn't be selling those prints, well, there's a big argument back and forth in the artist community about that. But I mean, you don't own Wolverine. You know, like them or hate them, Marvel Comics owns Wolverine, and that's their IP. Should you really be selling print? Granted, might be that artist's work, you know, and that artist probably put some painstaking hours making whatever that print is look amazing. But at the end of the day, that's still, you don't own Wolverine. You shouldn't be selling Wolverine art. You know, and you're taking away from guys like Jacob. We have a friend here in Rhode Island, Frankie B. Washington, and he does amazing stuff. Has been featured at Rhode Island Comic Con many, many times. He's got a fun style and does a lot of stuff with like kaiju and mecha. And he's been published in several comic books, both indie and professional. The guy's just an awesome dude. You know, but like you go to like, you know, conventions, and everybody's buying like these big comic book characters versus Frankie's art, which is just dynamically awesome. So,
I mean, that's kind of the problem, right? Because people are at the conventions because they're comic book fans, which means they're fans of Marvel and DC. And if you get someone who branches out enough to want to support artists and other characters or stuff that's not Batman, Superman, a couple others. By the way, Batman and Superman are both public domain in the next 10 years.
Wow.
They should be anyway. Hopefully we'll see.
Mickey Mouse, we'll see what happens. Do you guys try to chase on publishers? You know, say, hey, I really want to do art for your next project. Do you make those connections at conventions, or is that too much of a headache?
I will often chase into particular publishers who I want to work with. Yes. I would love to work with Green Ronin Publishing. I have a decent relationship with Hal Mangold, but they have yet to hire me. But you know, I am such a big fan of Mutants of Masterminds. If Hal came and said to me, hey, Jacob, we would love for you to do art for Mutants of Masterminds, I will be like, yes. Yes, send me everything. I will draw Mutants and Masterminds art for you any day of the week. And there are other companies I would be interested in working with, like the guys who produced Dungeon Crawl Classics, but I'm pretty good friends with one of their regular artists, and they have a pretty solid relationship with that guy, and he does work pretty much as quickly as I do, so I'm not going to take work away from him if he has a solid gig with them.
Right on, Aiden.
Yeah, I don't chase anybody at the moment. I agree with Jacob. I think that there's a lot of people out there that I'd like to do stuff for, but they already got an established art style, or they've already got an established artist. And yeah, you'd get a big no, thank you very much, because we already have that. Or yeah, you just don't want to be taking people up who was either artwork away from them. I don't mind doing that for writing, because I'm hoping that now we've got PDFs. We, technically speaking, a lot of these companies say, "Oh well, we won't do a major book, but we can do a $5 PDF for that, or we can do something like that, that kind of thing." So that's not too much of a worry. So I have obviously spoke to people in the past. Have you got any projects going up at the moment? But yeah, I am. But then again, I'm absolutely terrible at self promotion in any way or form. Anyway, so there you go.
Yeah, it's as a publisher, every once in a while someone hits me up, and I kind of have my stable of guys I'm used to working with, because you get gun shy, right? Sometimes you work with an artist and then they like ghost sometimes after taking payment, and so you kind of get guys you're comfortable with, and you just keep working with those people. I know on Jason Tondro's projects that we've done in the past, Supervillain Handbook and Arthur Lives, he felt very strongly about what's going on there, Walt. He felt very strongly about recruiting female artists and non-white CIS hetero male artists. So we put out open calls, because he's a writer, that's what he wants to do. I'm flexible, I can do that. And we got so much static putting out that open call. There were so many writers who had never contacted me before about any project who I was going to do, who were suddenly very pissed off because I'm saying, "Hey, are you a woman or are you one of these categories? Hit me up, we'll talk about this." And why weren't you guys talking to me before? And now you're mad at me. But we got some good talent from that, and I think Supervillain Handbook, which Jacob has art in, is a great looking book, and Arthur Lives is also a good looking book. But it seems like there's a lot of controversy about that kind of thing. I guess I know it's hard to break into the industry, but I don't know. What do you guys think about those kind of open calls for that sort of thing?
I don't mind them at all. I think we need a little more diversity in the industry. I mean, just looking at the panel here, I see a lot of white men.
Yeah, sort of. I'm mixed. So
okay.
Technically, my little icon is white, but he has got a gray background.
Aid, you win the internet today.
That's which I think makes me slightly dark elf. Is that great? You're right, Jacob. I think it's great, and that's a good thing. Artwork and writing, anybody should be able to do it. So yes. Anybody should be able to pick up a pen and go, "Screw it, right, I'm going to draw something, I'm going to write something." And now we have these, again, DriveThruRPG, we have, even if you can self-publish through that, absolutely fantastic. And yeah, so that's the best thing about it. You don't have to rely on other people kind of like, I mean, the casting call is a great idea, but it shouldn't stop people getting off their own back and trying to do this stuff as well. And you hear horror stories. I know there's a writer I know that did Doctor Who novels, and she was basically told, don't put your first name, just put your initials, because people won't buy Doctor Who novels from a female writer. And it's like, well, that's just crazy. So
I've heard that a lot. There were my dad was reading science fiction heavily through the 70s, 80s, and 90s. And there were several writers, some of the Star Trek stuff, who just went by their first couple initials, like DC Fontana is one.
Yeah.
And, they just for that reason, there's...
Well, unless I'm mistaken, J.K. Rowling actually is part of the reason why that's J.K. Rowling for Harry Potter. So it's like, what? So, yeah, a female wants to write a book about wizards? That's crazy. It's like, no, go for it, man. So, yeah, it's... But, yeah, sorry, Jacob, you carry on there.
No, I'm pretty much just in total agreement. We need more diversity in the industry. We need to hear the writing voices and see the art of non-white non-males, because it's been pretty much we've seen what the industry looks like with white men leading it for the last several decades. I would like to see more of a new generation, more diversity, and what they can bring, what they can show us, their artistic vision, all that.
I'd like to see someone under the age of 40.
Well, there's that as well. Yeah, that's
that
true.
Too.
Yeah.
A lot of us have been in the industry a while, and we need some fresh ideas.
I know you said 2007. I contacted you for art.
Mm-hmm.
It's 2019. Have we been working together that long? That's insane.
Yes.
That's crazy.
When I was doing research for my artistic background for this podcast, I was looking at when was some of the earliest stuff I did, and it turned out it was 2007 for you.
Yeah, and I think mine was about 8 or 9. So yeah, it's going on for 10 years easily. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, when I turned 35, I decided I wanted to start publishing or get my stuff out there, and so that's I went through a whole lot of that. Hey, since we're talking about business, let's talk nitty gritty. Do you guys insist on contracts?
I like having a general idea of a contract. For example, if you look at my rate sheet, I have this little blurb at the bottom, because I send this rate sheet to everyone, and my little blurb at the bottom says, "You receive a lifetime royalty-free license to use the art. Your commercial use of the art will be exclusive for a period of 6 months, though I'll retain the rights to use it for self-promotion during this time, to be displayed here and on other pages where my art can be seen by the public, such as DeviantArt, Facebook, and so on. After 6 months, your exclusivity ends, and I can license the art to other end users. If you want to retain exclusive rights to the art beyond the initial 6 month period, we will need to enter into an alternative contract." That is a baseline thing that I have on my rate sheet, letting people know that any art I do for you, you get exclusive use for 6 months, but after that I can turn around and use it as stock art if I so choose, or on a product that I am producing for myself.
Right on. Mike.
Sorry. Contracts, no contracts?
The only contracts I've ever done are for the big publishers. That's it. I've never done any contracts with anybody else. And I do like contracts because it's like, hell, I can add all the money together because I know exactly how much cents per word I'm going to get. That's fantastic. So that's cool. But apart from that, yeah, I differ to Jacob that I do not mind giving up all pieces of artwork to anybody that's ever used my artwork can use it again, whatever. I don't reuse my artwork for anybody, because I won't put my sell my stuff on because I just like redrawing stuff. I don't like to use it. Always bugs me sometimes when I see stock art in you use the J.E. Shield stuff, and you see several pieces in different products. And that always bugs me. But that's why I started, so I can kind of understand that. So anything I give to people that's not designated stock art, they will stay as their product. That's fine by me. I don't care. That doesn't bother me at all. And if they want another dragon, I'll draw another dragon. If they want another knight, I'll draw another knight. And if someone wants another dragon as well later on next week, I will draw another dragon. That's fine by me. So, yeah. But, yeah, contracts, never done anything for artwork in that respect, no.
All right. Well, hey, Walt, you are a publisher and a writer and a novelist. How do you feel about contracts?
I contract everybody I work with, pretty much. Even if it's so much so as an email, I make sure that at least there is some documentation of expectation, earning, and then expectation of delivery. So at some point we will have that conversation, and it will be in writing. In my state, an email is legitimate as an enforceable contract, an enforceable written contract. So, pretty much it doesn't matter where you are in the world. I can still use the laws for my state to force any type of arbitration should that be required. it's safer for everybody around to have the contract because it does two things. Number one, it motivates the publisher, me, to make sure that you're being taken care of, you're given the resources that you need to produce, and that I'm keeping the excitement level and the energy up so that you, in turn, can focus on my project and make sure that it receives the attention it deserves. As it's my project, I feel it deserves all the attention, right? So on the artist side, the artist has a enforceable written document that says my expectations of that person, the what I intend to pay them, and I always try and insist paying something up front. I started at a time when you had every hopefully there's a not safe for work warning on this, because here we go, right? There was every dick bag in the planet going, you want to draw for my project, and here's why. It is so awesome. It's going to be tremendous. It's going to be life-changing, and I'm exposing you. You work for the exposure. I will get your name. Fuck you. You know what I mean? I've worked with so many people that are like, you know, now that is different than partnership. I've worked with people before who have used my artwork in a partnership, and I've received royalties and but I've also been burned at the same time. So that's slightly different than working in a partnership. But when you have somebody who tells you that their life-changing opus is going to break wide and they're exposing your work, so that's what you should work for, tell them to go take a long walk off a short pier. Right? Because that person is useless to you. Because if their work was so epic that they demand your work for free, nobody's going to pay for it. You're not going to get paid. You're not going to get a return on investment. So with an enforceable contract, I can sit there and say to an artist, this is what I need. This is the date I need it by. This is how many revisions based on your working style, I should probably ask for. And if we agree on that, this should be a delivery date, a drop date by. And usually I'll write in the email or if I've done several actual physical contracts where I've mailed stuff out, various reasons, people's internet shoddy or what have you. But I always try and include a walkaway clause, so you don't or can't produce the art. I'm not happy because I'm not receiving any updates or a drop date by and blah, blah, blah. So we just walk away, no harm, no foul. If I've paid you in advance, that's totally different. I like to pay advances because it shows that not only am I a fan of your work, I want the work done and I'm willing to pay you upfront to do it. I'll always write in that email that if we have a walkaway clause, you have to return that money. Not necessarily all of it, but the lion's share has to come back because you didn't do shit. And if I have to chase you with a lawyer, I will. And I have done that before. So, the end user should understand that while we really enjoy all, you know, rolling dice, a lot of us are already gamers. We enjoy getting together and tell that collaborative story. And you know, we all have tales of being around the game table and just having that really fun night. And we're always chasing the dragon on that. As publishers and contractors in the RPG industry, we're doing this to make money. It might not necessarily be like, wah-ha-ha-ha, evil cat rub money. But I mean, it might be how you make your living, like Jacob, you know. And why shouldn't he have the ability to pay his bills, get a decent meal, and then go out and have a little fun once in a while? You know, because as our friend Sean Isaacs will tell, every time he's on video and he's hunched over his screen with like blaring one blaring light and like I just gotta keep going because I got a deadline, you know. Artists work, they're willing to work.
Sorry,
Got I just wondered that any listeners want to throw a footnote out there. Sean Isaacs is currently employed by Marvel Comics on various. Most recently, he was doing Champions.
Yeah, and he's got a Fantastic Four issue out recently with Hulk kicking the crap out of the Thing, which is very, very good.
I read that one just 2 weeks ago, yeah.
Yeah.
But, we're trying to get him back on the podcast with Ron Mars to talk about a World War II comic they're doing in October. So
Walt's right about exposure, because in the real world, no one would go, hey, come work for my bank. I'll give you exposure. You'll get great jobs afterwards. It just would happen. So, yeah, it's a crazy thing.
Yeah, it's a strange business in general, but yeah, you should never work for exposure, whether it's writing or art. You might as well just put out your own stuff. If you want exposure, work for somebody you at least kind of trust. Do it for yourself. That's an excellent point. We're coming up on an hour here. You guys have any closing thoughts before we wrap it up?
Yeah,
I have a lot more to say on the subject. So anytime you guys want to gather together to talk about the freelance business, I have a ton of stuff to say.
Hey, there was one thing I wanted to ask I forgot about. Let's go around and talk about inspirations. You know, why you got into this business/hobby in the first place. Jacob, you want to start?
Oh boy, where do I start? Inspirations. Well, Larry Elmore. Let's just go to the big names. Larry Elmore, Clyde Caldwell, these so many people who I just love their work. The only thing, this was my only problem with art back in the original days of RPGs and art that is now showing up in RPGs is... as beautiful as those original illustrations were, they're very stagnant. It's a lot of people posing with maybe a monster in the background. But it's a whole lot of posing as opposed to what you see in game covers now, where you get to see a lot of action shots. And that's something I really enjoy, is getting to see that dynamic action. And that's where I think a lot of modern artists like Wayne Reynolds excels. A lot of people may not like Wayne Reynolds' style, but you got to admit, that guy can make things look like they're moving.
How can you not like that style? I mean, he's just like, boom.
Some people hate him. I don't get it.
Like the whole dungeon punk aesthetic, is that what it is?
Maybe.
I mean, every time he draws something, I'm just fangirling all over the room. I'm just his stuff is
the aesthetic for it is obviously dictated by Wizards when he did that. So it's not as though it's like, okay, I know how to draw a paladin. Everyone stand back. Wizards have obviously said, okay, this is what we want from this. We don't want the traditional D&D. We don't want the old European style knights in armor. We want to see spikes. We want to see shields that are weird shapes. We want to see swords that have got little twisty turny bits of it. You know, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, I love the guy's artwork. I think it's absolutely fantastic. But yeah, you're right. The action stuff, it's never just like a guy standing in the field looking, you know, and there's a dragon coming behind him. There was always some kind of swoosh of movement somewhere. So yeah, yeah.
I was trying to share a screen with some of Wayne Reynolds' art, and I failed at the.
if there are people out there who don't know who Wayne Reynolds' art is, they're the wrong people to be watching this show. And if you don't know who Wayne Reynolds is, go and Google Wayne Reynolds' art right now.
I think he did a lot of art for Magic: The Gathering and also Eberron and various other Wizards projects.
Yes, Eberron.
Yeah. He's pretty much the go-to artist for any cover of Paizo. He used to be the go-to artist for Wizards of the Coast for a while, but you know he does a lot of his own stuff now.
Okay, cool. Aid, inspirations, go.
Comic book-wise, it would have to be Alan Davis, because I love Alan Davis' artwork, always have done. Inspiration for Elmore's stuff is always fantastic, but I'm never up to that standard, so I've never really worried about it too much. I really like, and I can never pronounce the guy's name, but the guy who Tony, who did the Planescape artwork,
Tony Dieterlese.
Thank you very much. The Planescape and Changeling, that stuff I absolutely adore. I really like that kind of stuff, but never actually kind of gone into that. But again, everything I've been, I've never really done anything anime or manga style as a RPG stuff, but I love that artwork style as well. But that's, again, that's one of them things where there's just so many different artists and different anime styles that it's so difficult to figure out who's who. The guy who does the artwork for Persona, and I can never remember, Shingari, I can't remember the guy's name now. That's terrible.
Can't be better than Masamune Shiro.
Yeah. Oh, well, Shiro. Shiro's fantastic as well. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So there's just so many good artists out there that I love. But it's too many.
Walt, same question to you.
Does that guy look like the actor that played in Mr. Mercedes? I can't remember his name, but I love him.
Wayne Reynolds' art of the dwarf iconic character from Pathfinder.
I love it. Even just standing there, he looks like, I'm totally going to shoot you in the arse, you know?
Either that, or could someone please take this backpack, because mine is...
I got to poop. That's the face he's wearing. Inspiration. God. My inspiration for art really comes from... you guys are going to make me admit this on the air. The Rifts RPG. I love...
Great art in that book.
Oh, amazing, amazing stuff all over the series from the early 90s. I'm not so into what they got going now. John Zalesnik. Oh, my God, those covers.
Zalesnik was good, long, especially.
Long, his stuff all over those books, the brilliant black and white. Oh, my God. And I know color sells, but nothing inspires the shit out of me more than a brilliant black and white image. You know, I mean, I don't know if it's just from reading like the old Conan from back in the day, those big giant oversized things that you used to get at the convenience stores. But 2000 AD, you know, when I started getting into that, brilliant. Yes. Oh my God. Look at that. That dude just standing there holding a rail gun facing that down is just like, I mean, you're riding right on the back of that with him. I mean, that's
from the Siege of Tolkien.
You know, I mean, God, how can you go wrong? I mean, I don't draw nearly enough anymore to chase that kind of style anymore. I'm lucky if I can these days draw a cat that looks happily, you know, although I do have a lot of photo reference jerk. There was so much brilliant art coming out back then, mostly black and white, except for those covers. And those, I remember the one that sticks out to me the most was Zalesnik's cover on the Japan Rifts book. It was just this woman wrapped in a kimono with standing next to a robot dragon. It was just, but it was,
it was a gorgeous piece.
Gorgeous, you know? So yeah, that stuff is just mind-numbingly good.
Let me see if I can dig that up.
Now, that's one thing I always loved about Rifts. Say what you will about the system.
It was bad.
They got beautiful art, especially in the early days.
There's something definitely to say there about the old black and white artwork stuff. I mean, to say a lot of Elmore's stuff was black and white, obviously in the basic D&D stuff. Timothy Bradstreet stuff in the vampire role playing game I absolutely loved. There's another guy in there that I don't remember the guy's name, but he always reminded me of Chris Bacalo. He did a lot of stuff for World of Darkness. Every time he did a lot of stuff for Wraith, and every time he put a new piece of artwork out, that was like, oh, this is so nice. But it's black and white. There's just something about black and white work that makes stuff look absolutely fantastic. Mm. But you know, it does seem to be nowadays. If you especially for RPG stuff, like mainstream stuff, especially if it's not painted, that's literally most of the only color stuff you get nowadays in books is either digital painting or obviously regular painting, and then you don't get that kind of black and white pen and ink style anymore. So
yeah, so, there's that cover. Oh my God.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Yeah, I struggle with doing color stuff, and I just like the way the books look. I mean, a lot of my projects are self-indulgent. I mean, I have snack cake ads, and
we love them though.
Yeah, it's
everyone loves them.
I hate getting to the end of a PDF and oh, it's a license page. It's all over now. That was hoping. And but you know, this little something there. It's a little bit of fun at the end. So I got that aesthetic all over my projects. It's kind of self-indulgent. I like them being in color. One of the best selling, maybe the best selling superhero RPG right now is Survive This Vigilante City by Bloat Games. Great book, OSR. It's a big hit. It's a lot of fun to play. We had it actually on the podcast here. All black and white. All black and white art. And, you know, he's very successful doing that. And every once in a while, I'm like, man, if I was a smarter publisher, I would do that. Then I'm like, but I like it in color. So, yeah, that's why I'm a hobbyist publisher and, you know, got a day job. So. But yeah, it's the that's a struggle I have daily. But,
so what you need to do is you need to set up a new noir setting.
Yeah, I don't know if I need to do any more RPG projects right now. I've got a backlog. I have Patreon backers like, hey, when's that new adventure coming out? I'm like, well,
I
get laid out for Savage Worlds and Fate. Yeah, so I guess that's one advantage of being an artist is you don't have to convert your stuff. I fell into a trap where I'm converting a lot of my projects, you know, Icon, Super, Savage Worlds, Fate, maybe a few others. And
yeah, you do realize, though, that I do layouts for almost all those projects. So I also suffer the pain. You do realize this. Oh, by the way, we've got an Icons version. Okay.
Yeah, I maybe wrap that up in the near future. We've been doing that for years now. And it's done okay. But yeah, it's definitely a thing. So. Closing thoughts, because we're over the hour mark now. If you guys could give one piece of advice to, let's say there's a young aspiring artist out there thinking about getting into RPG work, what would you tell them that you wish you knew when you started?
Make sure you have a diversity of style. If you only have one style, you might become a little stagnant in that, and it'll limit who will hire you.
Okay.
I would say don't give up, first of all. And second one would be do a comic of Kirby the Power Squirrel you mentioned earlier on, because I think that would be pretty cool. So I think that IP needs to be taken somewhere.
Have you guys seen the pictures that people have been posting of on FaceSpace of squirrels landing in superhero poses?
No, but that sounds really cool.
Or putting lightsabers in squirrels' hands. Yeah.
Oh my God! Don't say that.
That's either an RPG setting or a comic book somewhere along the line. There.
Yeah. Don't mention that to James Spahn. He would go mental.
We've got Pugmire. Why can't we have Squirrel Nutkin? But yeah, that'd be pretty cool.
You know, there have been wildly successful Kickstarters for animal themed takes on.
Totally.
Dungeon themed RPGs.
Yeah.
It's time for a superhero one. I think back about, you know, like stand up comics making fun of bad movie pitches that eventually become actual successful movies, like with two guys fighting and they switch faces and, you know, all of a sudden that's Face Off with Tom Cruise and the other act. Sorry, not Tom Cruise.
John Travolta.
John Travolta and the guy who's in all the movies.
Nick Cage.
And it's the stupidest idea.
It is.
Wildly successful.
And they're also going to get a remake, yeah. Yeah,
probably.
They're talking about it already. So, yeah, who's going to be the two faces? That's the question. It's like...
So I keep thinking, like, I mean, there was a... I don't want to say the name. And it was probably a fun game. The art looked great. But it was basically dungeon crawling, but with dogs. And people fucking ate that shit up with a spoon and asked for more. And it was...
No, that Kickstarter was huge.
Huge.
Great. People love animals, yeah. Yeah, I'm surprised. I mean, we had Pony Finder before the My Little Pony stuff come in. We got the Pugmire. Very, very surprised there is not a cat version out there somewhere. I know there's a Kickstarter that started not very long ago, which is called Root, apparently, which is based on a board game, which is kind of like medieval animals, kind of like... Oh, I can't remember the name. But yeah, that kind of thing. So yeah, and animal RPGs, yeah, cool. I'm all for it. The Ironclaw RPG, I picked up that on the Bandle of Holden not long ago because I just like the idea of, hey, that guy's a paladin, but he's also a horse. That's just cool. So yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely a thing. Walt, advice for newcomers?
Don't draw for the RPG industry, go for video games. Chase the money. Chase the money.
They have a lot more money to spend.
They really do.
That is true.
The difference is you will, instead of doing one picture of a character, you will have to draw 12 pictures of a same character, and only one of them will be bought.
Yep. Also, scene renderings, so they can do storyboards and stuff like that. Every time there's a Star Wars video game, I always buy the making of, or the art of books, because they're gorgeous.
Beautiful work.
Yeah, they're really, really good.
Yeah, I'd say, if you want to go technical, if you want to go deadly, deadly serious, learn proportion, learn how figures will actually work, learn how to draw backgrounds, because there's nothing more annoying than someone saying, hey, can you just do this character? Oh, yeah, but I also need him to be flying over a city or against a building or whatever, and you've got no idea how to do that. God. Or you can't draw automobiles or whatever. Don't be afraid to use photo references. Because they're fantastic. Say, Google Earth is there to be used, because if you need a skyscraper, find the skyscraper, draw the skyscraper, modify it a little bit. Play games like DC Universe Online, play games like Assassin's Creed Syndicate. Use those backgrounds. Take screenshots of them and use them as backgrounds and actually do stuff, because that stuff will definitely help you. There's nothing more annoying. I know in one of the, I can't remember if it was the Wizard's Guide to Comics or another like Marvel Guide to Comics, they literally said, learn how to draw backgrounds, because you can guarantee, oh, fantastic, you can draw the Thing, you can draw the Hulk, but we need him going down the main street in New York or whatever, and if you can't draw cars, and you're screwed. That, you can't do anything with it. So RPG stuff, someone's always going to come up with, hey, can you draw this for me? And yeah, you need to know.
City scenes were the bane of my existence.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my God.
They're very satisfactory once you've got them finished, but in the making of them, it's a nightmare. Yeah.
But all those freaking windows. Oh, yes. My God.
Yes. Yep.
So I guess we should probably go ahead and throw that out there as our final thought, is that if you're really looking to make it as an artist, there's probably more profitable markets to chase than RPGs. Is that fair?
There are certainly more profitable markets to chase than RPGs, because it pretty much goes Hollywood movies, way down here are video games, and way down here are RPG games.
So would you be better off spending your time trying to break into working for video games or working for comic books? Or, although it seems like breaking into comic books is some kind of, Herculean mythical task that you pretty much succeed through luck. So
there's a formula. The easy formula is
self-publish first.
Right, exactly. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Again, self-publishing is the way forward. Yeah, if you've got an idea for a comic book, go draw it, do it like that, and you may get picked up for somebody, DC or Marvel or whatever. But if you've got at least a couple of issues of something you've done yourself out there, that shows you're actually able to do the job. So I mean, that's fantastic. That's better than sending pages and pages of one shot stills or splash pages. You actually got a narrative storytelling from A to B. Yeah, that helps a lot. So
okay, I want to dig into this more. I want to ask you guys, at what point do you fire a client? Because that's
I've got plenty more to talk about. If you want to have more discussion on freelance art, I will be here. I have pages and pages of stuff to talk about.
And one of the things that we could do in addition to that, so that we're not just a bunch of talking heads, is with every discussion, have a rotating artist be up. Yeah, exactly. The talking heads have a rotating artist sketching on what do you call it?
Twitch.
Either Twitch or do it right here. Share their screen and
we could absolutely do that. Everyone's got a share screen thing in StreamYard, which is what we're using for our streaming these days.
Of course, if you did that, all you'd see would be lots of raising lots of lines over and over and over and over again. So
it's I'm going to post this on a lot of RPG groups on social media. Try to get some discussion. Maybe get some drama, because RPG people, and maybe monthly.
Cool. So, let's do it.
All right, hey guys, thanks for coming out. Always a pleasure to talk to you. To our listeners, thanks for checking us out, and we will catch you next time on the Banff Podcast.
Cheers.